plan for today is to continue talking about fiber bundles. We're going to talk about principal bundles, so we're going to set up the framework for gauge theory, and we're going to start seeing at the next lecture how we apply these things to gauge theory. Before we start, are there any questions about last lecture and the definition of fiber bundles in general? Okay, then let's get started. So before we get to principal bundles, there's a couple of things we have to see. One of them is an alternate way to define vector bundles. Last time when we defined the vector bundle, we said it was a special kind of fiber bundle where the fiber is a vector space, and also the fibers on the manifold are vector spaces. So last time we started, let me write it somewhere else. The idea was that pi goes from E to M represents a bundle, F was Rn, and also each fiber on the manifold Fa, which is pi to the minus 1 of the singleton of A, is a vector space. And then we asked that the trivialization gives an isomorphism between FA and F. So the requirement was that our space E already has fibers that are vector spaces, and then the trivialization preserves the vector space structure. There's another thing we can do. And the alternative way is by not putting any vector space structure on E. So we don't put vector space on each FA. If we don't put the vector space structure, then it does not make any sense to us that these things are isomorphisms, because if this is not a linear space, you cannot have a linear map. So instead, what we're going to do is the following. We say that if pi from E to M is a bundle with fiber F equal Rn, we say that E is a real vector space, a vector bundle of rank N if the following happens. If we have a set of trivializations then we're going to ask something of the transition functions. This is the same idea of what we do in manifolds. Because we don't have a structure on the manifolds yet, we look at the transition functions. Those act between spaces that are differentiable, and we can say something is smooth. Similarly, the transition functions, I'm going to denote them by phi ij, which is phi I composed phi j. This is the map that goes from ui intersection of uj times f to itself And f is Rn, so you can write Rn directly. We're going to ask that these things are linear. Now, these things are linear if we add a vector space structure to these spaces. To add a vector space structure, we can do it easily. So the vector space structure on some subset U of M times Rn is given by simply saying that if I have a point A and a vector V, and I want to scale it and add it to another one, this is just passing everything through. Yes?
Should it be a phi I inverse? How do you compose phi I of phi j?
Sorry, this should be inverse, you're right. Thanks.
Phi maps from the manifold to R, to Rn?
Phi I is defined as something goes from pi to the minus 1 of ui to ui times Rn. So when you invert the first one, it goes now from something times Rn to the bundle, and then the next one takes the bundle back to the same thing. So we're using here this kind of vector space structure, and we also use the fact that the transition functions preserve the fiber. Now, preserve the fiber means that this is just a consequence of the way the trivialization works. Phi ij, if I feed it a point A, V, then this is going to be something that looks like A and something else. There was that requirement that phi composed with the projection is the same as the bundle projection. Or another way of seeing it, equivalently, if I restrict phi ij to the singleton of A, times Rn, this is going to be a map that goes from singleton of A times Rn to singleton of A times Rn. So essentially, these maps don't change the first input. I'm feeding it two things, a point in the manifold and a vector, and they're going to spit out the same point and some other vector. The vector itself can be different. And really, the vector is the thing that's changing linearly. So this is the alternative definition. Instead of requiring this, we're requiring that. And note that this is true. Then that's also true, because if we do the transition functions, they're going to be compositions of linear maps. So they're still going to be linear. The tricky part there is that we don't have this linear structure, so we can only do the transition functions. And now, if we use this approach, we need to give a vector space structure to these things in some way, because we still would like to obtain the same thing. We want the fibers to be vector spaces. So at this point, we do the following. To get a vector space structure, we're simply going to define things this way. If A is a point in one of the sets UI, and P is a point, Let's call it something different. I think I called it x here. If x is a point in pi to the minus 1 of A, that would be the fiber FA. Then the way we're going to define, actually let's take x and y in here, because I want to possibly add things, multiply things, and so on. So if I want to do, for example, the sum of these two vectors, or in general linear combination, I'll say that alpha x plus beta y, by definition, is going to be phi I to the minus 1 of alpha phi I x plus beta phi I y. It's the usual thing that we've been doing since the very beginning of this course. When we don't know how to do something and we have some maps that say this thing locally looks like something else and that something else has some structure, we can use those maps to steal the structure. So we're saying, I don't know how to add these two things, but I know how to take this and map it into a vector space. Take this, map it into a vector space. So I map them into the vector space, do the operations there, then map it back. The only thing we have to make sure of is that this thing does not depend on the chart that I've chosen. If I change, instead of phi I use phi j, I should get the same thing. Otherwise, this is not a consistent choice as I move around the manifold. That's the only thing to worry about. So this is not dependent on the trivialization. And it's not difficult to see. So let's check what happens. Now, suppose that A is actually in the intersection of UI and UJ. And still X and Y are in there. Now, phi J to the minus 1 of alpha phi J X plus beta phi J Y. If you want to write them in terms of phi I, we need to use the transition functions. So this is just going to be phi j to the minus 1, then we have alpha. And phi j, we can introduce a phi I and a phi I to the minus 1, which is just an entity. So we multiply by phi I j. Well, in our case, we want, let me think for a moment. We're trying to get something which has phi I at the end, so we need to do phi j I of phi I x. This will be phi j composed phi I to the minus 1 plus beta phi j I, phi j I phi I. At this point, we use the fact that the phi ji functions are linear. So this means that I know how to multiply phi ji by alpha, and I know how to multiply phi ji by beta, and I know how to sum these two things. So this is just going to be phi j to the minus 1 of phi ji of alpha phi I x plus beta phi I y. And now phi j to the minus 1 composed with phi j I, they simply phi j to the minus 1 times phi j times phi I. So this is just phi I to the minus 1 of alpha phi I x plus beta phi I y. So in the end, because we asked that the transition functions are linear, then it does not matter how we define addition, because we can either do it in one chart or the other. The way we change from one to the other is linear. It does not care about summing. this construction is quite general. So I'm showing you this because it's a concrete example, but we're going to take the same idea to define, to give a way of defining more general bundles, starting from the transition functions, instead of starting from requiring that the vector space is, there's a vector space on the fiber, and then each fiber is a vector space, and so on. Any questions about this approach?
So could you summarize again, like quickly, like the differences between this approach and this approach?
Yes. So the original approach, which we have written there, is that we start with a bundle, then we ask that the fibers at each point are vector spaces. So we're already given the vector space structure. For example, the tangent space, we started with the fibers are the tangent spaces to the manifold. Those are vector spaces. And then when we look at the trivialization, we ask that the trivialization is linear. Because you want, in general, the trivialization provides a diffeomorphism between the fibers at the point and the fiber F. But because they're both vector spaces, we want these to also preserve that structure. What we're doing here is forgetting everything about the manifold. We're not giving it any vector space structure at any point. We only have the vector space structure on the fiber. And then we only require that the transition functions, which now map fibers on the trivial product space to fibers on the trivial product space, we ask that these ones are linear. And then you just give the vector space structure to your fibers on the manifold consistently in such a way that that will happen. So of course, if you may end up in a situation in which these two approaches don't work at the same time. And in that case, you are trying to put a different vector space bundle structure on a bundle that already has one. But that's unlikely to happen. Okay, so the reason why I'm showing you this is not really that important for us. In many cases, you do have this vector space structure. But this whole concept provides a starting point from generalizing these things to things that are not vector spaces. So if you want to add in general any structure to a fiber bundle, you can do that by just imposing some, I wouldn't say constraints, some requirements on your transition functions. Before we do that, let's notice something. Asking that phi ij is linear is equivalent to the following, that phi ij of uv is going to be, in general, is going to be, again, maps fibers to fibers, so the point u is going to be mapped to the point u. But also, the vector v, which is something in Rn, must be mapped linearly to Rn. And linear maps in Rn are just invertible matrices. So we can ask that this looks like this. Well, let me give it the proper name. Usually we call it Tij. It's allowed to depend on u. It does not have to be the same for each point, times v, where Tij of u belongs to GL and R. And more generally, because we are at each point assigning such a group element, and because we want things to be smooth, we would like Tij to be a map that goes from Ui intersection Uj to GL and R. This is exactly the same requirement as this one. If it looks like that, then it's linear. But if it's linear, there is such a matrix, because a linear map that maps a vector v into another vector v does have a matrix representation. So this is what we're going to start using as our starting point for adding structure. We're going to require that there is some group, which in the case of vector spaces is going to be GL and R, but it could be any other Lie group, such that the transition functions look like this. I'm going to be more specific, but that's our main idea. We're going to start giving transition functions in terms of some actions of a group on the fiber. Let's define what's happening. Okay, so suppose we have a fiber bundle with base M and fiber F. So this is a fiber bundle with fiber F. We're also going to assume that there is a group action, well, left group action, of some Lie group G on F. As usual, we want this to be a Lie group because it should be a smooth object. Everything needs to be a manifold in what we're working with. So vector spaces are good because they're also manifolds. General groups are not okay unless they can be given a manifold structure. An action of G on F, remember, will be something that looks like this. It's a smooth map that goes from G times F to F, that to the pair GF associates something that I'm going to call G with this symbol that means acting on from the left on F. If there is no ambiguity, you could just write G times F. And we also require, for this to be a group action, that the identity acting on F is F itself, and then G acting on H acting on F should be GH acting on F. These are the usual requirements of a group action. We have seen them already when talking about group actions for Noether's theorem. So if this happens, we can define something that's called a G-atlas. So G-atlas for a fiber bundle is a collection of trivializations. Such that, well, first of all, they should cover the whole thing. So the union over I of UI should be the whole manifold. And the transition functions satisfy essentially the property there. So phi aj of U F should be U T I J of U acting on F, where T I J is a smooth map from U I intersecting U J to G. we give a name to these things. We call them clutching functions. That's one of the names that people give them. Somehow, sometimes you just call them transition functions, even though technically the transition functions are phi ij, but these things fully specify them. So you, sometimes you just call them transition functions. So a G-atlas is simply a way to encode inside a choice of trivializations, you also encode that the transition functions should satisfy some property. So as we've seen before, if the fiber is Rn, the group is GLnR and just acts by matrix multiplication, then that requirement is the same as saying it's linear. But making it general like this by just saying there's some group action or some group on the fiber allows the fiber to be something which is not a vector space. It can be something more general. Quick second definition. If pi from E to M is a fiber bundle, the fiber F, we say that ES structure group G, if G acts on F and there is a maximal G atlas. The maximal thing we've already seen with manifolds is simply saying that nothing can be added. So it contains all the possible trivializations that are compatible with it. If you try to put another one, then it's not compatible. That would mean the transition functions don't satisfy what you want them to satisfy. So in general, this is what we're trying to do to put structure on a group. That's why we call this a structure group. We take some group that's going to define some action on the fiber, and then we just require that the transition functions act on the fibers like this group. And this is going to, with the same procedure that we used, where do we have it? Over there, where we added the vector space structure on the bundle by just pulling it over. It's the same idea. We use the transition functions to take any structure we want to add on the bundle. So at this point, it's a bit vague because we haven't seen examples. Although technically we have seen one, because in this formalism, vector bundles are fiber bundles with fiber Rn and structure group. GLnR, and then the action of, if G is in GLnR and V is in Rn, the action is simply given by G acting on V is G times V. That's simply matrix multiplication. So by doing this and requiring that the bundle as the G atlas, then we're asking that the transition functions are linear. And then we use those transition functions to put the vector space structure on each fiber. So just an alternative approach where we go from the bottom up instead of going from the top down. Top down will just mean that your bundle, your space E, already has all the structure. You're just making sure that when you use the trivializations, those respect the structure. Instead, what we're doing is I give you the trivializations, I tell you how to map between them, and then I add whatever structure I want on the upper space. So just a different point of view. But it's very helpful. I don't know how much we're going to be able to talk about this because you don't have a lot of time left. But it turns out that every fiber bundle can be constructed this way. You can always go from this bottom-up approach. This covers all possible fiber bundles up to isomorphisms. So everything about the fiber bundle is encoded in the clutching functions. And in fact, I don't even have to give you the bundle, the space E. I can construct the space E out of our trivializations. I don't know if that's something we're going to cover, but it's something that's called, depending on who you talk to, they have different names. Sometimes it's called the fiber bundle construction theorem. So you can just use all the information in there to build the fibers, which means everything is contained in the clutching functions. Any questions about this point? Yes?
Could the fiber have multiple structure groups?
Multiple structure groups? I don't think there will be multiple. It will be, like, you may have something which is the product of two different groups, for example. So say the fiber has two different things acting on it in different ways, but it will still be one action. So you could, I think, in theory, do something like that. Often what happens is that the more structure you add, the smaller the group becomes. So you could put some extra structure that reduces your group to something smaller. But you couldn't really have two different kind of actions, I think.
Giuseppe.
Yes.
Good question. So can I think of the fiber, but so E, the bundle, as like basically the group has a, it's like a quotient on the fiber bundle, right? Does it give me?
It gives you
how the action sort of.
It will give you the fiber. But that depends on
what. It breaks up my bundle into these.
It depends on the bundle. So the group does not have an action on the bundle itself. Not in the general case.
Mm.
It does in the next example of fiber bundle we're going to see, which is the principal bundle. So it depends on the kind of bundle you use. Right now, G doesn't act directly on the space E.
Yeah,
G acts on the fibers.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so one thing left to say about these clutching functions. There's some properties, they're very easy to prove, so we're not going to go through the proof. They just follow from the fact that phi ij are transition functions that are invertible. Tii is always the identity. Simply because phi ii is just the identity map. And then tij, the inverse of this group element is the same as T gi. And we evaluate at the point u first. Again, this follows from the fact that phi ij is the inverse of phi gi. And finally, the last interesting property is called the cocycle property. And you can think of it as the thing that defines the clutching functions. If u belongs to the intersection of three open sets, you don't have to actually be different. Ui, uj, and uk, then tij u is the same as tik u times tkj. So you can multiply two of these things together and end up with the third one, which always happens because it's a group element, but it happens in a special way where you kind of contract k and k, but there is no sum here, just multiplying two things with a fixed k. And again, this just follows from the fact that phi I k composed with phi k I is the same as phi I j. It is simply because these things are constructed by taking inverses. So all of these things are easy to prove, but because we're saying that, we haven't shown this at this point, but you can use the clutching functions to define the transition maps. If I give you a set of clutching functions, they should satisfy these properties, otherwise they cannot be associated to transition functions. So it's important to keep this thing in mind, because sometimes you have to check that they satisfy the properties, otherwise they're not good clutching functions. Okay, so the main reason why we went through the trouble of doing all this is that now we can talk about a different kind of bundle. So at this point, we're ready to talk about principal bundles. Principal bundles are very important. They are fundamental in the whole theory of fiber bundles, because it turns out that everything is connected to some principal bundle. You can take a bundle and associate to it a principal bundle, and to every principal bundle, you can associate other bundles. So sometimes it's helpful if you have a fiber bundle, you want to find something about it, you look at the associated principal bundle, find something in there, and it gives you information. For our purposes, though, the interest in principal bundles is that it's where gauge theories live. We're going to actually see how this happens in the next lecture, but now we're going to set up the framework on which we're going to build. A principal G bundle is a fiber bundle. Usually we call it capital P for principal with some base M, with fiber G, so F equals G. And as usual, G should be the group. And structure group G again. And the action of G on itself is just the natural way you will do an action. G acting on H is just G times H. They are group elements, so you can multiply them. So once we have defined this idea of the structure group defines the manifold, the bundle, the simplest thing you can do is the simplest thing that G can act on is G itself. It's the most natural action that you might think. Maybe not the simplest. Simplest will just be act by not doing anything on something. But that would be boring. This is the simplest interesting thing you can think of. And as we mentioned in the case of vector spaces, doing this induces some extra structure on the bundle. So the extra structure that we get is the following. There is a write action of G on P. So the thing that we get by doing this is that now the group G not only acts on the fibers, but it acts on the whole space. Yes?
If you have a particular base manifold M and group G, does it uniquely determine a principal G bundle, or do you have some freedom in the topology stuff?
So in this case, it does not uniquely determine the bundle, because you still have the transition functions. So when we say that this is a principal G bundle with base M, fiber F, structure group G, what we're fixing is the manifold M and the fact that G acts on itself in a certain way, but I did not tell you what the transition functions are. So the clutching functions can still be defined arbitrarily as long as they satisfy the properties that you want them to satisfy. That's important because otherwise every fiber, every bundle in this case would be trivial. Because the trivial bundle still works. So the trivial case will be P equals M times G. And the fiber is going to be G. And all you have to say is, OK, so there's only one global trivialization. And the clutching function is TII, which is the identity. And then you make it maximal by adding all other things that are compatible. But it doesn't matter. Once you have something that covers it, then adding stuff on top is not really important, just as with manifolds. In theory, you have arbitrarily many charts, but as long as you have some charts that cover the whole thing, that's what you need. So definitely, things are more interesting than this. There are bundles that are not trivial, so they are not all the same. Good question, though. If this were true, that would mean that the clutching functions are not important, but they really are. Okay, so let's look at that action, but actually before we look at the action, let's start saying something about why this is good for gauge theory. For gauge theory, we need two kinds of things. We're going to need a way to assign gauge fields on the manifold. When you want to talk about vector fields, you use a vector bundle. You use a specific kind of vector bundle, that's usually the tangent bundle. But this way, you have a map that goes from your manifold to the bundle and then associates at each point a vector. If you want to do this with a gauge field, we need a way to associate at each point a gauge field. So we'll have to decide what the gauge field is, what it lives in. But also, we need a way of acting with the group that's the gauge group on the fields. So with principal bundles, what's going to happen is that we use P for both things. So we're going to use sections of this bundle. Briefly mention what sections are. It's not really important. We're going to talk about that in the next lecture. But maps that send a point in M to P, we're going to use those, not directly, but almost, to talk about gauge fields. They're going to end up actually being one forms that live on P. But also, we're going to use maps from M to P to talk about the group actions. Because we're going to be able to say that at each point M, we associate something that kind of lives in M times G, so the fibers are kind of like the groups. So we can use that to find the gauge transformations that then act on P itself. And P is where your gauge fields live. It's kind of vague at this point because I just said a few words, I say gauge a few times, and then it sounds cool. But it is going to, that's the hope, be clear next time. Okay, so let's see this thing about the action. It's the same idea as that alternative definition of the vector bundle. I'm just going to define the action starting from the GAtlas. So let's see. So the action is given by this. If P is an element of the principal bundle, G is an element of the group, then we're going to define P being acted on by G. So this time I'm going to use this notation because it's a right action. This is going to be, again, phi I to the minus 1, and then we're going to take phi I for P, and we act on this by G. Now, for this to make sense, we need to know what the action of this on this is. Phi I of P is going to live in, so here we're assuming that P is in pi to the minus 1 or ui. Otherwise, we could not act on it with phi I. So phi I of P is going to be an element of ui times g. And just as before, when we talked about what is the linear structure on the fibers that look like that, that was Rn before, we're just going to say that if u g lives in ui times g, then the action from the left of some group element h on this thing is just u h g. The action on the right is just u g h. So again, leave the point u unchanged, just stack directly on the group. This is a standard thing to do. So now this thing makes sense. What we're saying is that I want to act from the right, the group element on P. I'm going to do that by first sending the point P to the trivial bundle, to the locally trivial bundle. Then I'm going to act with it because I can do that. And then I'm going to take the result back. It's always the same idea. And it's exactly the thing we said before about adding things. So in terms of the vectors, the vector bundle, this would have been add the 2 points, send them first, add them, then take the result back. And just as before, this thing ends up being independent of the choice of trivialization because the trivializations satisfy the fact that they have clutching functions that live in the group. So this we can see easily. It's pretty much the same thing that I did before. So to see that it's well defined, if P belongs to pi to the minus 1 of ui intersection uj, then phi j to the minus 1 of phi I p acting on g is going to be, this should be also j. So we have phi j to the minus 1. Now here we can write these as phi gi of phi I of p and g acts on this thing. And at this point, note that with this notation of a group element acting on a pair that lives in u I times g by just taking that inside. So this notation here tells us that phi ij of x, if x belongs to ui times g, I guess it would be the intersection ui intersection j times g, this is the same as the group element tij u acting from the left on x. Is this thing clear? Why it should be like this? It may be simpler if we actually split it up. If x is the pair u g, then phi ij of u g, we said was u tij u times g. But then this is, by the definition, the same as tij u acting from the left on ug. So this is just going to make things easier in this proof here. So now, this acting on this, because this is an element of ui intersection ug times g, this is just going to be phi j to the minus 1. And then we have tij, and the point at which we have evaluate is the projection of this thing. It ends up being pi of p. This acts from the left on phi I p, and then this is acting on from the right by g. And then we do the same thing with phi, sorry, it could be ji, because we have phi ji. And then we have the same thing here with phi j. We can write it as phi to the minus 1 I composed phi ij of this whole thing in here. But acting with phi ij on something is the same as acting with tij from the left. So this is phi I to the minus 1 of tij phi p acting from the left on tji phi p acting from the left on phi I p. And this whole thing we act on from the right with g. And it doesn't matter in which order we do things, because left action and right action commute, because you can multiply things from the left and from the right. It doesn't matter in which order you do that. Now, these two things are inverses of each other, because tji is tij to the minus 1. So multiplying those things just gives you the identity, and this ends up being phi I to the minus 1, phi I p, which you act with g. This is exactly the same thing I did before with the vector space, and just using the more general notion for the group. So this action is well defined. It does not depend on what I chose as a trivialization. It has a few other properties. I'm not going to prove all these other things because they're quite easy to prove. I have the proofs in the lecture notes, so if you want to check them, they are there. So other properties of the action or G on our principal bundle, the action is fiber preserving. this means that if P belongs to the fiber FA, then P, when you act on with G, still belongs to the fiber FA. So the action of the group sends fibers to fibers. Then the action is transitive on each fiber. This means that if P and Q both belong to the fiber FA, then there is a group element in G that sends one into the other. The action is also free. The fact that the action is free means that if P is sent to itself, for some P, so if there is one P that G sends to itself, then G is necessarily the identity. So this means that the action of the group never sends things to themselves. The only thing that sends points to themselves is the identity. Everything else sends every point to a different point. These are the properties of the action. And there's one extra thing about the transition function, so really the trivialization. The trivialization is what we call them G equivariant, which is just a fancy name for something very simple. Phi I of P acting on G is the same as phi I of P on which G acts. So it's just telling us that they commute with the action of G on the bundle. You can either act first and then apply phi, or you can apply phi and then you act later, same thing. So this is the same thing as saying the map is linear. Nothing weird here, and actually this is very simple to see from the definition. You just apply phi to the minus one on both sides. So these are the properties that principal bundles have. The extra structure is all in this action that you have on the bundle itself by the group, and it satisfies these things. Okay, so this is almost everything I wanted to tell you. The only other thing that I had planned was to give you an example of a fiber bundle, but we can just do that next time. But other than that, this is where I wanted to get. And next time, we're going to start seeing in which way these things apply to gauge theory. I don't think it's going to take one lecture, but we're going to start. Yes?
How do we usually relax the requirement of action being free?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Because that's quite strong, right? Action being free.
Yes, so the factor in the action is free is quite strong, but it's not something we require. It simply comes from the fact that our group is G, the structure group is G, it acts on itself by left multiplication, and that action is free.
Okay.
And it's transitive. So all of those properties actually come from the fact that the action of G on the fiber is a very special action. It never sends anything to itself unless you multiply by the identity.
For general fiber bundles, this is not true, right?
No, but for general fiber bundles, you don't really have this action in the first place. So these are not two things you are requiring. The only thing that I'm saying is that I can build the right action. One thing that I didn't show that this is actually the right action. So if you actually act twice, that's the same as acting with the product. Again, the proof is in the lecture notes if you're interested. So the only thing that we're saying is that this structure induces the right action. And then because of the choice of fiber and action on the fiber, it turns out that this action also has these nice properties. The thing that's really important is that it is fiber preserving. That's, we always want things to preserve fibers. If they don't preserve fibers, they're not really good things to put on a fiber bundle. That's what a fiber bundle has more than a manifold. It has fibers. At each point, it has one copy of something, and you want everything that acts on it to preserve that structure, otherwise you're losing information.
Okay, so how do we connect to actual physics and gauge transformation? So like, this G acts on like gauge field at the point, right?
So the action, G acts on P, which means that G is going to act on anything that you can define on P. So as it turns out, the gauge fields are going to be one forms that live on P.
Yeah.
They're not directly related yet to the gauge fields that you will think of as functions of the manifold, but you can do that later. So you're going to have two things. One thing is to each point of the manifold, you associate a group element. And that will be just a gauge transformation. But you have a group action that potentially depends on your base, on the point you're doing. So that's a gauge transformation. And then you can kind of use that to act on the, not directly P, but on the gauge fields that live on P. It's tricky to explain just in words, but we're going to see how that happens. It's not obvious at all that this should be the thing you have to use. It's not like you see that and say, oh yes, this is what I want to use for gauge theory. It is not obvious at all. But it turns out that by using this structure, you can describe gauge theories.
Okay.
And yeah, the goal of the next few lectures is to figure out how this connection happens and why it makes sense.